God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Thank you, friends, for tuning in to your Watchman on the Wall broadcast of Southwest Radio Church. This is Pastor Larry. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. dreamed of a world where skin color would not really matter. A white student in England has been told by her teacher that she doesn't have a right to express an opinion about the race issue because she is British, white, and has blonde hair. The teacher then accused the student, Kelsey, of having white privilege, saying she didn't live through the experience of another who evidently was black. The teacher tried to justify her actions by saying there was some sort of dispute between Kelsey and another girl who apparently was black. The teacher accused Kelsey of having white privilege and not knowing what the other girl had been through in her life pilgrimage. As the dispute proceeded, everything became clear. The teacher was triggered when Kelsey refused to bow before the altar of Black Lives Matter and paid the price of feeling racism toward herself and her color. Racism is never a good thing. It seems to be growing despite all the rhetoric against it. The reason? Racism is a sin problem rather than a skin problem. Humans can find plenty of reasons not to get along with one another. Division and disharmony seem to be the warp and woof of human beings. So if a black police officer writes a white woman a ticket for speeding, she should be able to refuse to pay the ticket. He didn't have the experience of being a white woman growing up in a white family. We are back with our guest, Richard Cutting. Before we get into our show, I want to remind our listeners about our pre-election If My People initiative. It is an urgent call to fervent prayer modeled on the lines of 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14. This is certainly a time to be prayer warriors. We also need to stand strong for our inalienable rights. They're not given to us by people. They're given to us by God. So to attack these inalienable rights is to attack the divine order of things. Please remember the order of rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Please remember that Congress is strictly forbidden from making any law that will prohibit the free exercise of religion, as the First Amendment tells us. We need to embrace it, to thank our God, and fight vehemently for the protection of religious freedom every time it is attacked, and that is happening all too frequently. Once again, our guest is Richard Cutting. He is a co-writer, producer, and actor in the new film, The Order of Rights. It has a streaming release date of October the 2nd. Thank you, Richard, for being our guest once again.
Barry, it's great to talk to you again, and I say hello to the Southwest Radio Ministries listeners. Thank you.
As we begin, talk to us about the streaming release date and how can our listeners view the film? Because I've seen the trailers and they are really quite moving. The dialogue really deals with issues. So supposing somebody in their family, their daughter, their son, whatever wants to view this, how do they connect?
Well, it's pretty easy. We're on four streams at this point as of October 2nd. That would be Amazon, Google Play, Apple TV, iTunes, and Vudu. So if you just go to those sites, you will find us. And our website is orderofrightsmovie.com. So you can always get to our film through our website, orderofrightsmovie.com.
Okay, that is very helpful. Richard, I really believe that President Trump is the most overtly bold pro-life president we've ever had, but he was not always pro-life. Do you know what happened to change his mind? Actually, I think there's been a lot of changes in his life for the better. But what about this issue? What caused his change?
Well, I can't really speculate as to personally what he went through. I've never really seen any reliable or authenticated information on the personal transaction he had. But as a New Yorker, I will tell you, one of the funny things in this last few years is I don't understand the vituperation about the man as a person, because it's been since the 70s, this man has been in the gossip pages and is a well-known figure, you know, for all his faults and failings. He is not new in any aspect. He's a man who's lived his life in the public. So this shock and awe about him is suspicious to me. And, you know, we all have faults and failings. So I don't really know how he came to it, but it seems as with so many things in our society, he's responding to the other side and having to look into his heart, I suspect, and see where he stands on the issue of personhood and the right to life. So I'm guessing there, you know.
Right. Well, at one time he was very popular with the left and with the wild crowd. Now, of course, they hate him, and people are suffering from the Trump derangement syndrome. And it's very interesting how where you stand on important issues will certainly determine your friends and your enemies. And sometimes you can tell a lot about the character of a man or woman by their enemies. And I think I'd want to know who a person's enemies are. And I think he has the right enemies, and I'm sure we all do. But, you know, sometimes we hear a woman say, the fetus is a part of my body. I should have a right to determine what happens to my body. But isn't it true that the unborn baby has a heart, lungs, a brain, and that's distinctly the baby's body? I mean, the unborn baby is not like a wart or a pimple just glued to the host. It's a distinct biological entity with its own circulatory system and so on. I think that fact alone, you know, just throws to the ground the common phrase, well, I ought to have the right to do what I want with my own body. It's not your body. It's another individual, another human being.
Well, you know, perhaps a personal reflection. I came to this topic pretty naive because it's not something that I grew up being terribly focused on. I was with a church where it wasn't necessarily a flagship issue up here, as you know, growing up. So I had to wade into it, and as the writer, had to quickly do the research so that I could write authentically about it. And when I got to the part about person or not person, and that's what we're talking about, you know, is the fetus just a clump of cells? You know, the minimization language comes hot and heavy when you encounter the other side. But I determined early on, well, it's above my pay grade. Who do you go to when you talk about life and death? Well, doctors. So I went out and interviewed, you know, a number of doctors, and I said, slipped it into the conversation, so if you have a pregnant woman, but are you treating one person, two people, and when do you start treating, you know, and they cut me off, every one of them. I think it was four or five doctors. They said, oh, no, if the woman is pregnant, we treat it as two individual medical cases. And I said, when does that start? And they said, if she has conceived, then it starts then. So I took the medical opinion, you know, it was technical. And the features you talk about, the neural tube, the circulatory system, they appear very early. So if you take that and then take the next step, which we're talking about killing, you know, and let's put it on the table. It's a tough word, but that's what we're talking about here, terminating, killing. Our society has very, very prescribed allowances for doing that act. You know, there's war, there's capital punishment, but it's not ubiquitous by any means, you know. And so the nature of this thing is very dicey at its heart. You know, is it a person and are you killing it? Those are the questions to ask, and it generates a lot of heat. I walked right into that as sort of a naive early research writer.
Well, I have a quote here from the Chicago Tribune, September 12th, 1977. The article is titled "A New Lesson from DNA: Life Begins at Conception." I want to read about 2.5 lines. It says, the overriding message of all this new research is that the life of a baby begins at conception. Informed care of that child must also begin at conception or even before, if he or she is to have a good chance for a healthy life. And that's from the Chicago Tribune. And I think that's very, very revealing. And I've got a statement, several quotes from the National Right to Life, but the science backs it up, that life, human life, begins at conception. Therefore, the sanctity of human life needs to reflect this scientific truth.
Yes, and I always like to argue from how I experienced it, because there's a lot of prescriptions out there. And another thing that occurred to me is just looking at a squirrel on the pavement or a bug crawling across the wall, there is a prime directive. All things that have life want life, you know. All things want to live. So that's a thing. Then the other side, I discovered that, you know, heaven help you if you tried to kill a baby bald eagle in the womb. Or, you know, we spend all this time defending animals' right to life, both in the womb and after birth. And yet this consideration of a human person seems to get less traction in certain quarters. This is horribly lopsided in my view. And that's just the secular level. I'm not talking about the Holy Spirit and the ordination of life by God. You know, I mean, that's the next pay grade and certainly important. But just on the street level, it's kind of tough to really make the other argument.
I know for 11 years I pastored a church at the edge of the Appalachian Mountains. We had 600,000-acre national forest, and we had quite a growing group of bald eagles. And I remember reading that the Forest Service said if anyone destroys a bald eagle egg, in other words, a potential bald eagle, it's a $10,000 fine. So it's not a chicken egg, it's a potential bald eagle, but it's really a bald eagle. Great fine. And yet, as you pointed out, you know, we protect bald eagles, but not the unborn. I think it's so hypocritical. And I think more and more people, fortunately, are coming to see through the hypocrisy of it all.
Yes. And if you look at a first responder responding to a call and there's a pregnant woman in distress, they will be treating both people. You know, it's just a natural human reflex. There's so many examples of this.
Right. You're absolutely right. Well, you know, it seems to me that since 1973, there has been significant scientific data coming in that proves that the unborn baby is fully human. So my question is, since 1973, has there been a significant change in how most Americans feel about abortion? Are we winning the battle? Are we moving in the right direction? And are people really seeing this thing and thinking very accurately about it?
Well, my understanding is that abortions as a totality, the gross statistic nationally, it is going down. And I think there are certain states where that's not happening as much as it is in other places. And the number of outlets, depending on the political environment, for getting abortion services is going down. You know, Alabama is an example of that. But in New York, it might be the other way around, you know. It's a very political thing, obviously.
Well, if a male who is pro-life is discussing this issue with a female who is pro-abortion, I know many times the woman will say, "You men don't understand." But isn't it true that there are large numbers of women who are pro-life and not just men? In fact, I'm thinking Abby Johnson is pro-life and she's a woman.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, and it cuts across all races and religions and some political beliefs. Women are deeply involved in this, you know, Christian women particularly. But because it's such a wheelhouse issue for women, they are the first affected, you know, I guess psychologically. And I don't know the exact statistics, but it's probably bumping up on 50% of women are really actively thinking about it, talking about it across the kitchen table type thing.
Right.
When it
so
comes
it's,
up, you know.
It's not true that a woman can say, "You men don't understand," because obviously a lot of women do understand, and they certainly, you know, realize that the unborn baby is a human being. And I think so many of the pro-life pregnancy centers have what they call it, ultrasound, and I understand it's about 80%. Change their minds about having an abortion when they see, you know, the baby. And, hey, this is a baby. This is my baby. I hear a heartbeat. I see, you know, thumb sucking and things of that sort. It's just amazing when you get a picture of what that unborn life is like and what's happening.
Yes, yes. I think that is a strong psychological factor. And, you know, that happens to the men as well, by the way, when they see the sonograms. There's a, you know, sort of an act of psychological, God psychologically giving people a real feeling about their child. Now, you asked me about abortion statistics. I was just kind of looking at it. And the statistics in 2017 are down to, I guess, 2017 perhaps may be the last real formal year, 862,320 abortions, down from 926,240 in 2014, and that's national. So the trend is good. And in 2017, sadly, 18% of U.S. pregnancies, excluding spontaneous miscarriages, ended in abortion. So 18%, you know, that's a big number.
Well, thank you so much, Richard Cutting, for another great interview. It's been great to have you on the show. And we've got one more program coming up. So, friends, please be sure to tune in. Richard, thanks so much for another great interview.
Larry, thank you. And thank you to the Southwest Radio Ministries listenership.
At this time, Matthew, our announcer, will come to the mic.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. We talk about the Constitution. What is in it? And what did the Founding Fathers mean about this or that? But the Constitution, in effect, is a collection of rules to prevent power from falling into the hands of a king. Our special offer today is the DVD by Bill Federer titled, Who is the King in America? You can have a copy for a gift of $20 if you live in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our call center at 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And you can order this well-made DVD on our website at swrc.com. We also have the book with the same title and the same great information for a gift of $20. Better yet, why not get both the DVD and the book, Who is the King in America, for a gift of $35. That number again is 1-800-652-1144. The address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
A new report from AFA.net states, quote, we have been hectored, harangued, and harassed into wearing masks, even though there is not one single solitary random control study that shows that they have ever worked. Not one, close quote.
At the beginning of this pandemic, Dr. Fauci told 60 Minutes on March the 8th, quote, there's no reason to be walking around with a mask, close quotes. The report indicates that's still true. Yet the governor of Connecticut, a Democrat named Ned Lamont, has now issued his 70th, yes, his 70th executive order dealing with the coronavirus. His latest edict mandates that anyone who leaves home without a mask is subject to a $100 fine. And just about anybody in state government can hand out a ticket to a criminal violator of this mask rule.
The article cited by Daniel Horowitz reports on the actual science on masks and respiratory illness. Because the virions of coronavirus are roughly 1/1,000th the width of a hair and 1/30th the size of surgical mask filtrations, surgical masks do not help. Surgical masks could possibly stop large droplets from those coughing with very evident symptoms, but they would not stop the flow of aerosolized airborne particles. In other words, the pores and masks are 30 times wider than the virus they're supposed to catch. Using a mask to protect yourself from a respiratory virus is like trying to stop a mosquito with a chain-link fence.
The Horowitz article cites information from the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford. Quote, it summarized six international studies that showed that masks alone have no significant effect in interrupting the spread of influenza in the general population, nor in healthcare workers, close quote.
The Daniel Horowitz report also cited Swedish epidemiologist Anders Tegnell. The scientific evidence for mask wearing to prevent COVID-19 is, he said, astonishingly weak. Netherlands medical care minister Tamara van Ark reported, quote, from a medical point of view, there is no evidence of a medical effect of wearing face masks, so we decided not to impose a national obligation, close quotes. Public Health England concluded, quote, there is but very weak evidence from epidemiological and modeling studies that mask wearing in the community may contribute to reducing the spread of COVID-19, close quotes.
Horowitz cites work from other studies which conclude that wearing masks is not a good idea since they serve as bacteria traps, incubators, and transport devices for pathogens and may actually make you sick. Dr. Jeffrey Klausner, an infectious disease doctor at UCLA, said wearing masks is all psychological, not physiological, biological, or scientific. Quote, masks only make you feel better, close quotes.
Daniel Horowitz concludes that, quote, we have become emasculated as a society. We have become a people who are willing to surrender every morsel of our liberty at the ever-changing and capricious whims of so-called public health officials, even when they are appallingly contradictory and without any evidence justifying the 180-degree U-turn. Quote, our passivity has allowed our entire country to become a Halloween nightmare masquerade every day with no end in sight, close quote.
Hi, this is Jerry Tyson from Southwest Radio Ministries with a very important and special appeal to you. The upcoming election is going to be the most important national choice in all of history since Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, back in Joshua 24:15. In 2 Chronicles 7:13 through 15, we read an interesting promise given directly from God to Solomon, the political leader of Israel, about 3,000 years ago. If I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and will forgive their sin, and will heal their land. Now mine eyes shall be open, and mine ears attent unto the prayer that is made in this place. While we're not dealing with Israel and its temple, there is no doubt there is pestilence among us. Our nation is ready to be destroyed by the socialist and communist locusts who want to devour the America our generation was given. God asks us to do four things, and in return, He will do three. We must humble ourselves, pray, seek God's will above all else, and turn from our personal sins. If we do, God promises He will hear us, forgive us, and heal the land. He added the promise that He will be alert to hear our prayers. We're going to call this the My People Initiative. Between now and November, we will be reminding you not only of the need to vote with biblical values, but to stir your friends, your pastor, and congregation to not sit this one out. Consider the two candidates. Neither one is qualified to be your pastor, but only one is qualified to be your president. Start a new habit. Each time you thank the Lord for your food, remind Him of His promises in 2 Chronicles and dedicate yourself to being what He wants you to be so He can answer your prayers. Join us in the My People Initiative and thank you.
Have you ever felt that there is a dark spirit of evil associated with the Black Lives Matter movement? AFA.net has a study that shows that is exactly what is driving the BLM movement, occultic practice.
The organization's founders, Patrice Cullors, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tometi, are known as community organizers. But there's more to the story. You have likely seen or heard about the recently resurfaced 2015 interview wherein Cullors revealed its true underpinnings. Quote, we do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia, in particular, are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists, close quotes.
Not only are BLM's founders trained in Marxism, but its founders are actively operating in the demonic realm. Spirituality is the center of BLM, said Cullors during a June 13 Zoom call with Dr. Melina Abdullah, co-founder of BLM Los Angeles, as they discussed the methods by which they, quote, practice traditions from West African places, close quotes.
She continued and said, when we come out into the streets and we pray, the first thing we do when we hear of a murder is we come out and we pray. We pour libation we built with the community where the person's life was stolen, said Abdullah. The term libation is, by definition, the act of pouring a liquid as a sacrifice, as to a deity.
As Abdullah described the act performed on the street, she added, "And it took almost a year for me to realize that this movement is much more than a racial and social justice movement. At its core, it's a spiritual movement. Because we are literally standing on spilled blood. And you can't pretend like that's work. That's just like something organizing work."
Hiba Farag, Assistant Director of Research at the USC Center for Religions and Civic Culture, examined one of Abdullah's rituals. And she explained that as Abdullah was pouring libations on the ground, those present chanted, "Asay, Asay." She clarified that the Yoruba term is often used by practitioners of Ifa, a faith and divination system that originated in West Africa.
Colors intimated that she was saying more than she should, but said, quote, "Hashtags are for us way more than a hashtag. It is literally almost resurrecting spirits so they can work through us to get the work that we need to get done. I started to feel personally connected and responsible and accountable to them, both from a deeply political place, but also from a deeply spiritual place. Maybe I'm sharing too much, but we become very intimate with the spirits that we call on regularly," close quote.
So, what do we conclude? The riots, the destruction of property, the attacks on America's godly foundations are demonic and devilish. If you ever thought that was the case, the evidence has now come forth. It is all coming to a head in the next presidential election. Do we really want to put an administration in office that supports the mayhem caused by demons?
When there are so many violent protests in the streets, some people are so desperate to have order restored, they relinquish freedoms to the state. Don't forget our special offer today, the book and the video by Bill Federer titled, "Who is the King in America?" Our phone number is 1-800-652-1144. Our address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And our website is swrc.com.
In fact, if you haven't already, you should visit our website and check out our video page. It's listed as Watch on one of the tabs. We have many videos there you can watch and get some great Christian teaching. That's swrc.com and click on the Watch tab. While you're at it, if you're on Facebook, you should visit our Facebook page. We have a whole bunch of videos on there as well. And if you like it, tell us.
Thanks for tuning in today. Tune in Monday when we begin a new series here on the Watchman on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.